You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Thursday, July 15th, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we're going to take an even deeper look at the Orioles' first-round draft selection. The outfielder, Colton Cowser, out of Sam Houston State, that the Orioles drafted with the fifth overall pick in the 2021 MLB draft back on Sunday night. We want to take a closer look at Cowser, because we gave you the brief overview of the Orioles' first pick back on Monday's episode, but today we have a guest coming in who has basically watched Cowser play every day for the 3 years of his college career. And that is Jason Barfield, who is the play-by-play voice of Sam Houston State Baseball. He's actually been on this pod once before back in May to talk about Jordan Cannon, one of the catchers in the Orioles system who was having a good year at Delmarva before an injury and also played his college ball at Sam Houston State. But Jason's going to join us again a little later to talk about Colton Cowser's college career and what he does good and why he got himself into the area of a top 10 pick. Also, at the end of the pod, we're going to give you a couple more undrafted free agent signings that the Orioles have made. Of course, they made their 21 draft picks over the 3 days of the draft, Sunday through Tuesday. They signed one undrafted free agent on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday, they signed two more, so I'll give you a quick little blurb on those two guys. And then also here at the top, wanted to kind of explain, you know, what underslot means, because back-to-back years, seemingly the Orioles have taken players in the first round who are known as underslot picks to save a little bit of their draft pool money to spend it elsewhere, but did get a couple of questions about what that really means, so did want to kind of answer those and clear up what it means for Mike Elias and crew. But that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by another pod here on the network. That is Locked On MLB Prospects. It's MLB draft season, and the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast is covering every future star of Major League Baseball. Host Aram Layton brings you player interviews and farm system breakdowns every single day. Subscribe to Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods. So I just really wanted to start today's episode with clearing up some questions about, you know, what it means for the Orioles to go under slot. Because we know last year in the first round, the Orioles had the number two pick after the Tigers took Spencer Torkelson number one overall. Many thought that the Orioles would take Austin Martin, the shortstop out of Vanderbilt, number two. They were kind of the 1-2 picks on everybody's board throughout, you know, the season leading up to the draft. And then the Orioles instead took Heston Kerstad, which most people rank, you know, 9th, 10th, or 11th on their boards. And Austin Martin ended up falling a little bit in the draft, going to the Blue Jays. And the question was, why did the Orioles do that? Well, it has helped that Austin Martin has been a little disappointing since he's gotten a double-A with the Blue Jays. But the other question was, why do that? Well, the Orioles were able to pay Heston Kerstad a little less money, save $2 million, and with that $2 million in their draft pool, they were able to sign Kobe Mayo and Carter Baumler, the high schoolers they picked in the fourth and fifth rounds, and get them into the system, guys that probably otherwise would have ended up going and playing college baseball for 3 years before being eligible for the draft again. And that one was pretty clear cut. You know, it was the Orioles saving that money, and we know exactly what they did at the end with that money they saved in a five-round draft. But it's a little more interesting to figure out when you have a bigger draft. You know, usually we're used to 40 rounds. This year was only 20, but it's harder to see exactly where that money goes when you're making 21 draft picks instead of six draft picks, which the Orioles made in the shortened 2020 draft. But did want to kind of answer some questions about this, because I did get a question on Twitter from @StoffyB on Twitter saying, listening to the pod from Monday, question, if a player knows their slot value, why would they ever sign for less? And this was a really good question that I think a lot of people have, and I think there's a lot of questions about the Major League Baseball draft in general, because frankly, it's not anything like, you know, the drafts we're used to watching, which are the big spectacles, the NFL draft and the NBA draft. In the NFL and the NBA, especially in the NFL, if you get picked in the first round by a team, you know, they know how much money they're going to pay you. It's a 4-year contract. It's a fairly standard number that basically every first round pick gets around that same amount of money. It's a 4-year contract, and then there's a team option for the fifth year. So you usually end up with a 5-year contract most of the time for your first round picks, and then you have to sign them. And if they're good, it usually takes a lot of money to bring them back. And it's a similar deal in the NBA. You know, all the first round picks get a similar amount of money, and then there's different things for the second round picks. And same with the NFL. You know, obviously the guys picked in rounds 2 through 7 get less money and less guaranteed than the first round guys, and less guaranteed years as well than the first round guys. But, you know, it's pretty standard there. And what you do in the NFL draft is, and the NBA draft especially, is you draft for need. You know, if you're a team like the Baltimore Ravens and you have Lamar Jackson right now, you don't draft a quarterback. You know, you might draft one in the 6th or 7th round to get yourself a backup, like the Ravens did with Tyler Huntley. You know, and they brought him in as an undrafted free agent, and he's probably going to be the Ravens backup. But, you know, maybe you do that, but you're not going to take a quarterback in the first round when you have Lamar Jackson. What you're going to do is what the Ravens did, is take Rashad Bateman, a wide receiver, because everyone knows the Ravens needed to upgrade their pass catchers to help out Lamar, and that's what they did. And the same thing happens, you know, in the NBA. You look at teams who tank in the NBA, they get a top 5 pick, they need a scorer, they need a guy who can handle the basketball and, you know, come in right away and help their franchise, so they take somebody like that. For example, the Pistons are picking number one in the NBA draft in a few weeks. Cade Cunningham, probably going to be that number one pick out of Oklahoma State. They're going to take him. They're going to play him right away and hope he can help turn around their franchise. But the difference in Major League Baseball is that, you know, there's maybe one player a year who gets drafted in the Major League Baseball draft who pitches in the big leagues that same season. Other than that, you know, you have guys at least going through, you know, a half season, usually a full year. You know, even the best players, you know, who were drafted in this 2021 draft, you know, probably don't get to the big leagues until 2023. You know, there is some time you spend in the minor leagues, and especially, you know, if you draft high school guys, it takes even longer. You know, for the college guys, which the Orioles usually go for, it is a little bit of a quicker shoot through the system just because they're usually about 3 or 4 years older. But that is where this comes into play because, you know, for the Orioles, yes, the Orioles need, say, a second baseman right now. And yes, the Orioles would like to have much better starting pitching right now. But that doesn't mean that's exactly what they're going to go for in the first round. Because say the Orioles had drafted a Kumar Rocker, he's not going to be in the rotation next week. It's going to take some time in the minor leagues. And same thing goes for, you know, if they were to draft a catcher. Now, they didn't end up doing it early, but, you know, they could have potentially drafted Henry Davis, who ended up going number one overall to the Pirates. You could say, well, why would they do that? They have Adley Rutschman. Well, you need two catchers, the big league level. And Henry Davis, you could move him to another position. Somebody could get injured. Many things could happen throughout the minor leagues. You want to stack up the system as much as possible. So that's kind of the one thing about the draft in the MLB. You know, it's very different than other sports because you're trying to fill up your farm system, get depth in the system. You need guys to play every position at every level of the system, not just Major League Baseball, but you need, you know, guys and backups at every position at AAA, AA, High A, Low A, GCL. You know, you need positions everywhere there to field these minor league teams and continue to develop your players. But the other thing here is really, you know, what is under slot? And that's what I wanted to get to as well. And so here's how to explain it, because it was a good question on Twitter that I got, because it was, you know, why would a player agree to take less money than their draft slot is worth? And a big part of that is these deals that, you know, teams, you know, they say the Orioles cut a deal with Colton Cowser. You know, we don't know exactly how much money he's going to get yet, but they talk to these guys before the draft and they figure out which players are going to be willing to take a little bit less than the slot money. So let's look at Colton Cowser, because this is a pretty good example what the Orioles did this year of really explaining how this process works. So the Orioles are probably looking at the draft and saying, okay, Marcelo Meyer is, you know, the number one player. He's not going to be there. Jack Leiter, you know, they'd love to have him, but probably not going to be there. So you take those two off the board. You know, maybe they'd think Henry Davis would get there. He ends up going one, though, so the Orioles probably knew something about that, that he wouldn't be there. And then the number three pick, Jackson Jobe, the Orioles were never really interested in that high school player. So they're looking around and thinking, okay, do we spend all of our money at number five and take, you know, Kumar Rocker? And Kumar Rocker, a guy who the Mets are apparently paying about $6.5 million, which actually would have been over slot for the Orioles. So they'd say, okay, do we take Kumar Rocker, use more of our money than we thought in the first round, and then maybe, you know, our hands are tied a little bit later in the draft, or do we try and, you know, spend less of this pool money and spend it later in the draft? Because each team has a set amount of money that they can spend in the draft. So even though the Orioles aren't paying Colton Cowser the full $6.18 million that his slot is due, whatever money they save, they spend later in the draft. Underslotting is not cheap because you still spend all the money. Last year, yes, the Orioles saved over $2 million on Heston Kerstad, but they spent it all later on Carter Baumler and Kobe Mayo. They spent the same amount of money. You can't call a team cheap if they're spending all the money they're allowed to spend in the draft. So the same thing is going to happen here. And with Colton Cowser, here's basically how it plays out. So Colton Cowser, you know, the MLB.com board had him as the 10th best player in this draft. So say Colton Cowser's probably talking to teams, because a lot of teams talk to him before the draft, asking him, you know, where he's going to go, what money he might be willing to take. Let's say that the highest pick otherwise that was willing to take him was the Angels at the number 9 pick. The slot value for the Angels is $4.9 million. So say that was the best team in terms of draft position. Nobody above 9 had talked to Colton Cowser. So he knows, all right, they haven't talked to me. They're not even thinking about me. So the Angels are the highest pick that's thinking about me. Then the Orioles come calling at number 5. Now all of a sudden, the Orioles are the best team talking to Colton Cowser, and the Orioles know that as well. So Colton Cowser can either get drafted by the Angels and accept his $4.9 million slot value, or he can get drafted by the Orioles at number 5, and the Orioles can say, hey, Colton Cowser, we will give you $5.1 million. To Colton Cowser, all this sounds better. You get taken 5 picks higher, which obviously looks better for you. You go 5th in the draft, and you make $200,000 more than you would have made with the Angels. But on the Orioles side, they're still looking at it and saying, the slot value here is about $6.2 million. We are only going to pay him $5.1 million. So we're saving, you know, a little over $1 million that we can use later in the draft. But for Colton Cowser, he's making more money than he thought he was going to make, because, you know, the only teams, the highest picking team that was talking to him was the Angels at 9th. So it's an odd system because of the slot values in the draft, but that is kind of the reason why these players accept these deals, because it's basically higher, you know, teams drafting saying, hey, we're going to take you. We know that, you know as well, that if we don't take you, you're going to fall to at least 9, 10, 11, and none of those slot values are even up to 5 million. And teams rarely pay over slot for picks like this, especially college players. So it would have been hard for Colton Cowser to get $5 million. Instead, the Orioles come calling and say, hey, we'll give you $5 million. That sounds great to Colton Cowser. That's the best amount of money he can get. Plus, it's the highest potential pick he could be at number 5 in the draft. It is basically, you know, a win-win in that sense for Cowser. And for the Orioles, they're still saving $1 million because the slot value is about $6 million, and then they have $1 million to spend on other guys later in the draft. So at the end of the day, yes, it does hurt the players usually, because the Orioles are kind of taking advantage of knowing that he can't make any more money that they can give him while they're still spending money, and, you know, that they're not, you know, required to give him the full $6.18 million when he's picked there, and they can instead save some money on him and use it somewhere else. But that is the draft system we're in right now, and that is why, you know, things like that happen. And, you know, you look at a guy like Khalil Watson, who many thought the Orioles would take at 5, fell all the way to number 16 to the Marlins. Many of that may have been that Khalil Watson was asking for, you know, top 2 or 3 pick money, you know, was asking for $7+ million. And once the top 2 picks went off the board, Davis and Leiter, these teams like the Tigers and the Red Sox and the Orioles and others saw that Khalil Watson was asking for that much money and said, we don't want to go over slot. And it took until the Marlins probably saying, you know what, Khalil Watson, we will give you that $7 million that you want. Yes, it's going to make us, you know, not be able to sign a lot of other guys, but we want you that bad. And that's kind of why guys fall in the draft. If guys fall in the NFL draft, you know, there's teams saying stuff about their makeup, or, you know, there might be an injury scare or whatever it may be. Sometimes in the MLB draft, guys just fall because of numbers, of money that they want. And it's kind of a broken system, but it's where we are right now. And again, you know, the Orioles aren't being cheap when they do this. They're still going to spend all their money. You know, we haven't found out who they're overpaying. I'm sure Creed Willems is going to be one of those guys, the high school catcher they took in the 8th round. There's a chance that Reed Trimble, the outfielder from Southern Miss, who has only been in college for 2 years, does have a lot of leverage. Orioles will probably, you know, $200,000-$400,000 more they will give to him. And, you know, we're expecting Colton Cowser to get about $5 million, which means the Orioles would have about an extra $1.2 million to spend on these other players to get them to sign with the Orioles. Even their 20th round pick, Trendon Craig, is a junior college player committed to NC State. Orioles will probably pay him a little extra money to get him to come to Baltimore. So that's how it works. Again, kind of a broken system, a very confusing system, but that is why, you know, players do accept these draft picks and these numbers that are less than their slot, because they talk with these teams for weeks and months leading up to the draft, and they still know that, hey, even though the Orioles are paying me $1 million less than they could, it's still more than I could get from any other team. But either way, whatever the Orioles pay him, it seems like Colton Cowser is going to be in the Orioles system and hopefully a future Orioles big leaguer manning the outfield for the O's. But we wanted to talk about Colton Cowser, the player, and what he can really bring on the field. So we're going to bring on someone who watched him play pretty much every day of his three-year college career, and that is Jason Barfield. He is the play-by-play voice of Sam Houston State Baseball. That's where Colton Cowser played his college ball, and Jason's going to join us on the pod coming up next to talk about Cowser's approach at the plate, his defensive abilities, and Cowser the person, and then when they really, really knew that Colton Cowser was going to be a first-round talent. That's all coming up after this break. So we'll get to more talk about Colton Cowser in just a second, but first got to tell you about Fully Loaded Chew. Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut and pouches that give you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz you're used to without tobacco. Available in 9 flavors, Fully Loaded Chew is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine available. And Fully Loaded Chew is the only moist nicotine pouch on the market. All other nicotine pouches are dry, white pouches and nothing dips, spits, and packs like Fully Loaded. So Fully Loaded Chew is offering Locked On Orioles listeners a special offer. Right now, you can try a can for just $1. That's right, just $1. So go to www.fullyloadedchew.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. It's just $1, and you get free shipping if you use the code LOCKEDON at checkout. So the next time you go for a dip, make it Fully Loaded Chew, and get it at fullyloadedchew.com. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. So why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using rockauto.com. The price is reliably low for every single customer, and they have everything you could need, from brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. And they make it easy for you as well. I know nothing about cars, but can go on rockauto.com and know what I'm looking for. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On Orioles in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. All right, so we are happy to welcome Jason Barfield back into the podcast. He is, among other things, the play-by-play voice for Sam Houston State Baseball. And we've had him on this pod once before to talk about Jordan Cannon, who came out of Sam Houston State and having a nice season in the Orioles system. But this is maybe an even bigger topic, because the Orioles' first-round pick this year, also coming out of Sam Houston State, that is Colton Cowser. Jason's here to talk about him. First of all, Jason, thank you so much for jumping back on the pod.
Hey, appreciate you having me back. Always enjoy talking Bearcat baseball.
And so we want to talk Colton Cowser, because obviously, you know, there's been a lot of discussion already about him joining the Orioles system as the O's take him number 5 overall in the first round of the draft on Sunday night. And so where I want to start, honestly, is his junior season, which is obviously, you know, this 2021 year that really solidified him as a first round and you know, as we were getting closer and closer, potential top 10 pick in this draft. And, you know, the numbers are insane. You know, 374 average, a 490 on base. He hit 16 home runs, which more than doubled his career total up to that point. And so, you know, you got a front row seat to him in 2021. You know, did he take something even to a next level in his junior season? Kind of what was it like to just watch him as a hitter just dominate the Southland Conference this year?
You know, I think it was interesting too, because there were some unknowns. You know, you didn't know what to expect. Most of these guys, you know, Colton included, didn't play much 2020 baseball. They didn't, there wasn't a summer season. So, you know, you didn't know, is there going to be rust? What's going to be like? And he really came out and started playing well. And it looked like it was starting to click. The swing looked a little bit better. It was a little bit more crisp. And there was just more pop. It had a better sound coming off the bat. And I think that was the first thing we noticed early on. And it was a very confident looking stroke. You know, I think back to the Minute Maid Classic when we were down at Minute Maid Park, and you're playing, you know, Rice and TCU and those guys down there. And it just looked easy with him. And, you know, and that was, you know, that's a couple of weeks into the season. He had a couple of doubles, a couple of base knocks in that. He threw a guy out at the plate, and nothing looked like it took much effort. And you're just like, okay, he's got this now. This is a thing.
Yeah, and he was just so good all season. And I did want to ask specifically, you mentioned a little bit about having more pop in the bat, but you know, he obviously had a huge season as a freshman, his conference hitter of the year in 2019, and 7 home runs and 216 at bats. That's a pretty good college year to go along with his stats. But to go from that to 16 home runs and actually less ABs and 203 ABs as a junior, you know, how much just from seeing him kind of develop as a player, was it, you know, swing change, approach change versus just, you know, maybe getting bigger and just barreling up more balls as a junior?
I think it's more that. I think it's just, you know, kind of a scrawny kid coming out of high school, but he had a great mechanic. He had a great swing. So you knew you're going to drive the ball and you're going to get it out of the yard as a freshman. He got into a college weight room, and he got into a strength program, and he just started putting all of that together. So when you already have the natural ability that he had and the great swing that he had and a contact guy, and then you put a little muscle on it and you put, you know, and you add all that to it, the nutrition program that he went through here, and you put all of that together. And, you know, like you said, all of a sudden 7 home runs become 16. And that was the thing about it, is that it looked so effortless.
I think something that hasn't been talked about a lot so far as people are kind of breaking down this pick for the Orioles, you know, they talked about his hitting ability, how it's so advanced, how the power's really come on. You know, they've talked about his defense. I don't think the plate discipline has gotten enough talk. And, you know, 76 walks to 70 strikeouts in 3 seasons, including 42 walks to 32 Ks as a junior. So, you know, how did that kind of elevate his game? Because that was always a big part. I mean, you know, he had great numbers there in 2019 as well. But how did that elevate him as a hitter? Because I'm sure some of those walks were that, you know, guys maybe pitched around him in big spots as well. But I'm sure he earned his fair share.
Yeah, certainly you had a little bit of that. But, you know, this team had some depth on it too. So there were some bats behind him. So it's not like they were really wanting to give away free bases. I think that was one of the things, you know, sometimes you see a guy, and we've seen it before in the past when we've had guys who were projected top 10 round guys, and, you know, you have a big midweek matchup, you know, where you're playing Texas or Texas A&M. And so the scouts are coming in because they're going to watch both. And you see a guy wanting to press, and, you know, he wants to show that he's got some pop in that bat or can drive the other way and, you know, may take some swings that are kind of ill-advised. Colton had no problem having a 3-walk night if there were 20 scouts sitting back behind home plate watching him play. That was his approach. He didn't change a whole lot. You know, he and I sat down and we did a podcast before the season started. And I just asked him about, you know, coming into this year and, you know, the scouts that are going to be there and the pressure that's going to be on, just how does that change your approach? And he immediately said it. He goes, it's not going to. He goes, I you know, they've been out watching me in the fall, and he got a chance to kind of get a little bit of those nerves out. And I think partly not playing in 2020, you had more people who came to watch him play in the fall. And so he got used to having scouts around in a kind of a non-competitive situation, just watching workouts, watching fall ball. So by the time this spring rolled around, he was completely comfortable having 20 to 25 guys there watching him every single night. And I think it allowed him to just play his game, not press. And like you said, if it meant taking a couple of walks that night, that's fine, because they've already seen what he could do. They know what he can do with the bat and everything like that. They're looking at some of the other things And he really took that to heart and allowed him to play his game.
You mentioned those games early in March where a lot of eyes were on him, and they did just that. You know, he had a 3-walk game against Rice. He had a 2-walk game against TCU, where I'm sure there are a lot of eyes on him. And then against Texas, he showed that, you know, he can go 3-for-5 as well. And so, you know, he was able to do it. But I, in the same vein of the plate discipline, I do have to ask, you know, he was hit by a pitch 23 times in 3 years, but 14 hit by pitches in 2019 as a freshman. That is a large number. What was it stance? Was it, you know, is he crowding the plate? And if you know this, is it something he would take pride in? Because especially as a true freshman, that is a pretty big number to get yourself 14 in your first year.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that. I didn't even realize the number was that high. I do remember him getting hit his freshman year, but I didn't remember it being that big of a number. And I think partly just because we were just so used to him being on base. So however he was going to get on, you know, nothing really stood out as being out of the ordinary, because at the end of the day, he was just on base a lot. And I think that was the thing that really stood out to us, was he was a guy that you could count on even as a freshman, that he was going to be out there and he was going to be a productive part of that offense.
Now, you know, let's shift to the defense, because the first question that anyone's going to ask when you've got a center fielder who hits this well and is a, you know, taller guy at 6'3", the first question out of everyone's mouth is, will he stick in center field? The answer seems to be yes. And is it yes from what you've seen him do defensively at Sam Houston State?
Yeah, he gets to balls that I've never seen people get to in our park. There was a play this year. I don't even remember who it was against, but it was, I mean, the ball was hit deep in the gap and he came over full sprint, laid out, made the catch. And you're just like, nothing's going to fall out there, you know, if he's playing center field. And so the range was there. Great first step towards the ball. I mean, just the instincts were really good. And then he showed the arm, and the arm is incredible. I think at one point this year, somebody tried to run on him and they were out by like 3 or 4 steps. And I'm like, at this point, why are people still running on him? I mean, he's already shown what he can do. You know, I don't know if you've seen the highlights from the Rice game where he throws a guy out from center field at Minute Maid, and it, you know, it's deep, and he puts the ball. I mean, it is on the mark, and you're just like, you know, they keep doing this, and he keeps showing what he can do with the arm. It's just, we've never seen a player with this kind of full package of, you know, of tools. And it's been so much fun to watch.
I do have to ask, you know, with that package of tools, and he was, as we know, absolutely phenomenal as a freshman. Then, you know, he gets 14 games as a sophomore, you know, like many others, what are you really able to show in that short of a season? And then he comes back and dominates even more as a junior. Do you remember the point? Because I know, you know, for a lot of college baseball programs, when you start to know you're going to have a first round pick, you know, the more scouts show up, there's just a little bit of an aura around that guy. You know, when you go other places and other teams know, like, hey, here comes the first round guy. At what point in his career did kind of you guys know around the program in general that, like, this is going to be a first round selection?
You know, I think when you start talking draft projection on him, it was the Team USA. It was when he made Team USA, and he, you know, and it wasn't, he had to earn that. I mean, it wasn't like he just went out and had a, you know, a freshman season that every single person in the country was like, you have to see this kid at Sam Houston play. He had a really good season, but, you know, it didn't earn him an automatic spot on Team USA. He got invited to camp. He was one of, you know, I want to say 60 or 70 guys, whatever they brought into that camp. And he was actually a late invite to that camp as well. He didn't come in on day one, and, you know, he showed up, he made the team, and then he was MVP of that Cuba series, the 4 games they played there. And I think that was really what, you know, from our side of things, we knew how good of a player he was going to be. That was when he got back from Team USA, and you're like, okay, you know, he's got a chance to really be something special for us. You know, we've had one first round pick in the history of our program. It was 41 years ago. And so, you know, at that point, you're like, this could be the guy who challenges that. And, you know, so from then on, like I said, he comes off the USA thing and has the short 2020. And you're just like, you know, you don't know how that's going to affect the process. You know, is this short season going to hurt him? And, you know, I think ultimately, you know, he had kind of gotten off to a bit of a slow start in 2020. And then everything kind of came to a stop. But, boy, he came back this year and kind of put all that behind him and really showed what he can do.
Yeah, well, Orioles fans excited to have him on the field, not just at the plate, but in the outfield, and obviously hoping he sticks and he's the next big league center fielder for the Orioles. But the last thing I got to ask is, you know, especially being a team's first round pick and a team that, you know, is not winning at the major league level, so many fans are very focused on the minor leagues right now and what the Orioles are bringing in to their system. You know, we're going to fairly quickly get to know kind of Colton Cowser the person as well. So, you know, what can you tell us about Colton Cowser the person, you know, the guy who is entering into this Orioles organization?
He's a really good kid. I mean, just super easy to talk to. He's the guy that, I mean, the teammates are going to love him immediately, just his demeanor on the field. But, you know, he's a ball player. I mean, that's the kind of kid he is, and that's what he lives. And, you know, I think he's the type of person that Oriole fans are really going to love, just because he plays the game the right way. And, you know, he's going to go out and he's going to work and he's going to grind. And I really think they're going to enjoy him. I can't wait to see how he starts playing in the minors. And I'm hoping that I get a chance to go see him play a little bit. And you know, I'm looking forward to it.
There's a good chance he ends up teammates with Jordan Cannon once again, probably to start his minor league career. And that'll definitely be cool for you guys, I know. But Jason,
yeah, I got on the he had a Zoom last night with the Orioles PR and some of the media people. And so I jumped on that and I got a chance to ask him just about Jordan and getting a chance to play. And he said Jordan had already sent him a text that night. So they had already talked and he had a chance to have lunch with Jordan when he went up and did his visit with the Orioles last week. So they had already gotten a chance to sit and talk about the possibility of playing together. So I know that's something he's excited about as well.
Yeah, it should be cool. And you know, we talk about these Sam Houston State guys in the system, Jason. I'm sure at some point, as we talked a little bit about off air, that the Orioles are going to bring in someone else from Sam Houston State, and we'll probably have you back on the pod as you've become a regular contributor at this point. But thanks again for joining us.
It's becoming a thing, isn't it? It's becoming a thing.
It's definitely becoming a thing. But thanks again for talking. Colton Cowser is a guy that Orioles fans are going to have their eye on as he's going to, you know, enter the top prospect list, enter the top 100, and hopefully be a big part of the next winning big league club for the O's.
Looking forward to it.
So we'll get back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Now, baseball season, it's in full swing. You can track all the action at BetOnline. And how about some, you know, second half over-unders? Orioles 28 wins in the first half, of course, a little more than halfway through the season. You know, you could look at some numbers about, you know, how many more games the Orioles are going to win. Are they going to get to 50 this year? That's something you can bet on over at betonline.ag. But it's not just baseball. You can get all the latest news, odds and info for all your sporting needs. How about the NBA as well? Game 4 of the finals last night, what a comeback by the Bucks as they covered right at basically around the buzzer. So maybe play some bets on who's going to win the pivotal Game 5 coming up this weekend. So don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So our thanks again to Jason Barfield, the play-by-play voice of Sam Houston State Baseball, for joining us on this podcast once again to talk about Colton Cowser and his college career, the 3 years he spent just dominating at the dish at Sam Houston State. And it was also interesting to hear about kind of the story of Colton Cowser, you know, getting invited to play for USA Baseball in that series against Cuba, where he ended up being the MVP. He was playing along with some of the best, you know, prospects in the country in that series, and he was the guy who shined, and he was kind of a late addition because of an injury. He was added to the team, and he really broke out, and that's when he really started getting on people's draft radars. But just a great hitter from the left side, and again, you know, I know he was number 9, he was as high as 7 on FanGraphs, but, you know, as low as 11 on some boards, and the Orioles took him 5th, and you feel like, you know, maybe they're stretching a little bit there. This is still a fantastic player, and many felt like the second best college bat in the draft. The best college bat being Henry Davis, who went number 1 overall to the Pittsburgh Pirates, then number 2, is Colton Cowser. And, you know, it's not an exact comparison, but we've heard, you know, little murmurings that, you know, the Orioles might have their next Nick Markakis in Colton Cowser. I will take that every single day of the week. But speaking of the draft, the Orioles did select 21 players in the 20-round draft from Sunday through Tuesday. And then as soon as the draft ended, the O's were able to start signing undrafted free agents. And this is somewhere where they had a lot of success in 2020. Of course, there were going to be, you know, even more undrafted free agents with the draft only being five rounds last year. And the Orioles got some really good players. They got J.D. Mundy, who is currently leading the system in home runs this year with 12. They got T.T. Bowens, who is right there with those guys. I believe he has 11 home runs right behind them in the system this year. They got a bunch of pitchers who have been just fantastic in Delmarva this year, especially Brandon Young, the tall right-hander, who has been just great for them. And so, you know, they've done a great job, and they're trying to do that again. Now, we told you about one of them yesterday. The first undrafted free agent signing they made was the catcher Logan Michaels out of Virginia. Orioles made two more signings on Wednesday, and we're not sure, you know, if they're done yet. But they do have two more players to add. So the first one is the right-handed pitcher Daniel Fetterman, who is a reliever out of Miami. Had a 4.04 ERA in 46 and a third innings pitched this season. Now, strikeout numbers aren't crazy huge at 39, but he only walked 9 batters. Has incredible, really command on the mound. 11 career saves in his 4 years as a Hurricanes reliever. You know, he has closing experience. He allowed only one run in his final 20 innings pitched this year, so really got hot late in the season. He's got a fastball up to 95, really likes to use a changeup and a slider. Even has a curveball in there as well. We'll see if he sticks with those four pitches, but an interesting arm that the Orioles added. And then the other guy was another right-handed pitcher. That is Carson Carter, a right-handed reliever out of Oklahoma, who had a 4.39 ERA this season in 41 innings. He struck out 51 batters, a lot higher strikeout numbers there, 21 walks for him. You know, he had a pretty bad finish to his career with Oklahoma right at the end of the year. He gave up 10 earned runs in his final 4 appearances over 4 innings. But he had some good moments at Oklahoma, a fifth-year guy who played 2 years at JUCO, spent 1 year at Texas Tech where he didn't play, and then his final 2 seasons at Oklahoma. So an older guy who will, you know, may start right at Delmarva once the Orioles get him into the system. So those are the next two undrafted free agents, but the Orioles, you know, could be potentially adding more as we go along. And we will continue to get you, you know, those undrafted free agent signings. And we'll continue to talk about the draft picks. And that's going to continue on tomorrow's episode, the final one of the week, as we're going to talk about the Orioles' second round pick in a little more detail. That is Connor Norby, the star second baseman from East Carolina, who the Orioles took in the second round of the draft this year. One of the best hitters in all of college baseball this season. Orioles picked him up with the 41st pick. He was the AAC Player of the Year. He led all of Division I baseball with 102 hits, and he hit .415 with 15 homers. What a fantastic hitter he is, and we are going to talk a little more about him on tomorrow's episode. Steven Igo, who covers East Carolina baseball, is going to join us to tell us all about Norby, his career at ECU, and what he could bring to the Orioles. So that's coming up tomorrow, but until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.